You're listening to Chuck Chat Technorama for Monday, November 7th, 2005.
Any similarities between this podcast and actual events and or persons living or dead are purely coincidental. Names have been changed to protect the innocent, and no animals were harmed in making of this podcast.
This show is a proud member of the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech, it's here.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. Six hygroscopic Margot veins. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated amulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fam. Milford trunnions. And the phase's lunar wane shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplaneration. Retroincabulator.
Welcome to Technorama. Do not attempt to adjust your MP3 player. There's nothing wrong with it. We are really this large. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp, and we are here to geek you up.
All right, that was horrible, wasn't it?
No comment.
How are you tonight, Craig?
Fantastic, man. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. Had a wonderful weekend. You had a lot to talk about. Had a photo shoot session on Friday. The local newspaper is doing an article on podcasting featuring yours truly.
Show me love. Yes, that's it.
Work it, baby, work it. That's what I felt like. Out in the sunroom with just my microphone and headphones, and there was no other equipment around.
Okay, now I can't work like this. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I was a professional, though. He had a great camera. I did do a little audio recording, and we'll hopefully sneak that in as a segment later about his camera and his affinity towards certain brands. And I have to be careful to edit, though, in case one of those brands that he did not mention so highly of chooses to be a sponsor at some point. That would be uncool. And went to a computer recycling place yesterday and dumped off about 25 machines, servers, and, about 8 monitors.
You were contributing to the problem?
I was getting rid of junk in my basement.
Oh, yeah.
And got a little audio on that also, so hopefully we'll be working that into the show as well. My mind is always in data acquisition mode for this show.
And you know, this last week I was looking at putting multimedia in my living room, like my movies, my pictures, and all that stuff.
Yeah, you going to talk about that?
Yes, I am.
Wunderbar, as my horrible German goes.
Wait.
See?
Wee wee.
We're so multilingual. We know PHP and C++, but our French is absolutely absurd.
Vamoose.
Well, coming up in tonight's show, we've got what Craig said. He's thinking about multimedia in his living room. We've got our final installment of the Adam Savage interview and some other stuff like links to hacks, some listener feedback, which we will be checking out right after this. On this day in tech history for November 7th, 2005. This is November 7th, the 311th day of the year, in the Gregorian calendar, of course, with only 54 days remaining in 2005. It was on this date in 1665 that the London Gazette, the oldest surviving journal, is first published. And in Craigellachie, British Columbia, construction ends on the Canadian Pacific Railway, extending across Canada on this date in 1885. It was also on this date in 1910, the first air freight shipment from Dayton, Ohio to Columbus, Ohio, is undertaken by the Wright brothers and backed by a department store owner, Max Morehouse. Buck Rogers in the 25th Century airs on the radio for the first time in this date in 1932. And in 1940, in Washington, the middle section of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapses in a windstorm, a mere 4 months after the bridge's completion. NASA launches the Global Surveyor to Mars in 1996. And in 2001, the supersonic commercial aircraft Concorde resumes flying after a 15-month break. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1867 to Marie Curie, the Polish-born French chemist and physicist. She was a pioneer in the early field of radiology and recipient of the Nobel Prize in Physics and in Chemistry. And finally, happy birthday in 1927 to Hiroshi Yamauchi, the Japanese computer game executive. He was the third president of Nintendo beginning in 1949 until stepping down on May 31st, 2002. Yamauchi is credited with transforming Nintendo from a small Hanafuda card-making company in Japan to the multi-billion dollar video game company that it is today. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for November 7th, 2005.
TechJet.com. Ramblings of a technophile.
Craig, we've got some listener feedback. We have been called out on our On This Day facts.
Gee, how rare is that?
that people are correcting us? Actually, I'm glad they are. What I'd recommend more is that they go to Wikipedia, since that's where I get most of my info. They said, on board is the first animal to enter space. When I was talking about the Soviet cosmonaut program and they launched a dog named Laika, he said, that is incorrect. Fruit flies were the first animals into space. Laika was the first animal into orbit.
Wait a minute. Are fruit flies actually animals or bugs?
No, they're animals. They're not plants. Right? No, flies are animals.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess. Are they?
Yes.
No, they're...
Don't you remember your old science? There's the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom. That goes kingdom, phylum, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
When did they do that?
You forgot your whole classing in, of animals and plants and things, didn't you?
Hey, I was let down by the public school system.
So we're calling them out.
Yeah.
All right. We also got called out on the Beach Boys. I said that the Beach Boys wanted to use a theremin for good vibrations. No, I said that they did. I said the theremin was made famous by the Beach Boys. And I said that the Beach Boys wanted to use a theremin for good vibrations, but there wasn't one available, at least not the standard theremin. They used a device based on some of the same principles, a tannerin or electrotheremin. And again, there's links to Wikipedia in there. Mm-hmm. If you go to wikipedia.com/wiki/theremin or tannerin/tannerin.html, you'll find all kinds of good stuff.
Hey, oh, by the way.
Yes.
Yes, a fruit fly is an animal. It says, fruit fly can refer to any animal of the family Triferidae or Drosophilidae or whatever.
So much for your Latin, too. We don't speak Latin.
Maybe they should go to the southern system.
It's a fly.
It's a fly.
It's an annoying fly.
Yeah, get that thing out of here.
What kind of fly is it? Kind of makes me mad. Kind of bites.
Oh, man. All right. Move along.
All right. We also have voicemail from Charles Stell. And, you know, I had half an inkling to donate this to FIT, but we were a little shy on listener voicemail, so I kept it.
Man, you're selfish.
I just don't have time for much else right now.
All right,
that road
on.
Trip yesterday killed me.
I bet.
Hey, Chuck and Craig. This is Charles Bell from down in the piney woods of Arkansas, and I have a question for you. How often do you guys clean up your PCs, you know, open up the case and suck all of the dust bunnies out? As you know, we use lasers in our business, so I PM them every Saturday, spend about half a day cleaning up air filters and so forth. But I looked at my PC keyboard this morning after doing the laser PM and noticed you could probably plant potatoes back behind the function keys. So what do you guys do, and how often do you do it? Or do you just let them go until they turn to compost? Thanks.
Clean the computer. There's a concept, right?
I never thought about that.
All right, I know what you're supposed to do. What I actually do is a different story.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you, I just had to open mine up and change the hard drive out, and yeah, it needed a little cleaning. I do have an air tank that I can fill up and use it as a big air, you know, air can to spray it out.
Yep.
I do that every once in a while, but I haven't done it in a while.
I would recommend doing that in the garage, though, because if you blow, those dust bunnies go all over the place, and now you wind up cleaning the rest of the office.
You always do it outside.
You can also take a standard vacuum if you're careful, making sure you don't, you know, bend pins on solder point leads and things, so you have to be gentle.
It's like a brush attachment.
Yeah, you can use a brush attachment, and a standard household vacuum these days will do a pretty fair job if you get the little skinny nozzle attachment. What are you supposed to do? It's recommended that you go in there about once a year, maybe 18 months, and clean them out, because the typical household is quite dusty. You mentioned in a laser environment where you've got cutting and dust is? You've got dust flying all over the place.
Cutting dust is?
The worst case scenario I ever saw was in a welding environment when I was a service technician in the way gone days in the 80s. And I literally had to take that thing apart and clean it in a sink. I mean, I had all the boards out and I was scrubbing the chassis. But normally when I go in and clean them out, it's during a service, like Craig said, a hard drive upgrade or RAM or swapping out a video card, and I'll just go, yeah, which is the typical reaction. But
hey, I can top you on the, I used to work at a company who sold software only to veterinary clinics. It was a, you know, vertical software type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would travel around South Carolina, some parts of Georgia, and North Carolina, installing these Unix systems with their software. And let me tell you, veterinary clinics, have some nasty freaking computers. I'm not kidding. I would open up, and I would have sworn there was a small puppy in there.
Yeah, everybody's got nasty computers. There's just a lot of dust and paper fibers, and yeah, everything seems to get in there.
Well, you know, a lot of the veterinary clinics I went to, they had gravel driveways, so there's a lot of dust already. Then you got all this animal hair floating around because they're passing animals around all day. And, I mean, you would not believe.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen balls of hair sitting on the motherboard. I wonder if it was working.
You know who would really do this segment justice?
Who's that?
Victor.
Maybe we should pass that to Victor.
I think so. Victor, I know he listens, so this is a message. Shh, nobody else listen. Victor, you got to do a segment on cleaning and the proper techniques and what you can use. Is compressed air the right thing? That whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
Over at typical PC user, typicalpcuser.com is where you'll find all that good stuff. And there, now we steered some traffic his way.
He'll teach you how to flush your computer.
All right, we also have a follow-up from Chad Streck, who is our geek that works with me. And he is giving us a follow-up on the Easter egg in the Star Wars 3 DVD. Yep, it's there. Got it to work. While researching how to do it, there are also blooper reels accessed the same way in the first two movies and the bonus disc in the trilogy set. And he says, regarding the Star Wars Easter egg, look up to see what George Lucas's first feature-length movie. It's called THX 1138, which is why that 1138 access code was used.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that? I mean, seriously, you didn't know
that? No, I didn't know that.
Oh.
But I have number two sitting right out there, Star Wars Episode 2. I'm going to go
comment the THX 1138. Maybe I should bring that with me this weekend.
Does that have anything to do with THX sound quality thing?
Well, not the movie itself, but the number, or the letters, yes.
Okay. You know what THX stands for, right?
Theater,
nope.
Something.
Nope.
I don't know.
Nope.
What?
TH is the initials of the guy who invented it.
Thomas Haltman.
Oh, well, it's short good. For
Thomas Haltman crossover.
Really?
Sorry. Yep. Okay. Just exercising my geek knowledge.
Well, hey, I knew what 1138 was.
All right, we're going to have to rip through the news.
Yep, do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This comes from an AP technology writer, Mei Wong, on Thursday, November 3rd. In today's world of mass retailers, it's easy to assume that the big box store like Best Buy or Walmart would be the best place to buy consumer electronics. Guess again. Consumer Reports reader survey suggests that shopping online might be the smarter choice. It goes on to say that brick and mortars for a lot of these things are not the best place to go for digital cameras, DVD, DVR players, camcorders, handheld computers, yada, yada, yada. At the top of the list for such online places are Crutchfield.com, Amazon.com, Costco, JNR, and Buy.com.
So, I haven't been to Crutchfield.com in a long time.
Neither have I. I completely forgot about it. And I have various opinions on some of those others that I won't mention here. So, just, it's not earth-shattering news that the online stores are cheaper, but, you know, if you're looking for that quick geek satisfaction of having something in your hand, there's nothing like running out and buying it, and it's usually not a drastic difference. Well, I needed some CDs and some jewel cases for the expo by Wednesday, so I just ran out to Best Buy this afternoon and got it. While I was there, I picked up a memory stick. Not a memory stick, a flash drive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wasn't terribly expensive, but, you know, am I going to save $3 by ordering it online? Probably, but some of that gets a wash in the shipping.
Oh, when you start talking about shipping, you know, if it's just a few bucks, I'll jump down to the store and get it. But if it's, if it's $25, $50, you know, you start thinking about it. Hey, you know.
And then from CNET.com on Friday, just in case you don't have enough backseat drivers, your car could one day tell you when you're about to screw up.
Great.
Wouldn't that be nice? On Thursday, General Motors demonstrated a vehicle-to-vehicle, or V2V, there's a nice acronym we need, wireless communication system that alerts you when a collision is imminent. Warning, Will Robinson, you're about to crash. That's nice news to know right about then.
You're right.
The automaker equipped regular Cadillac STS sedans with wireless and global positioning system antenna and computer chips that allow the cars to communicate with other vehicles with similar equipment. See, I always thought Bluetooth would be a good solution for that if it had just a little more range.
Yes, range. Mm-hmm.
The technology demonstrated here with three cars navigating a special course creates what could be described as a digital driving symphony. The wireless technology in one car detects the presence of other two Cadillacs and avoids collision by either alerting the driver of danger or by automatically stopping the vehicle in an emergency.
I'm sorry, I could hear now.
In terms of an alert, the driver's seat gives off a heavy vibration of the left leg. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? If the driver signals to enter the left lane, unaware that a car is in a left blind spot. Such a warning is an example of what, in the auto industry, is called haptic feedback, or feedback related to the sense of touch. There's a visual cue, too. An icon flashes in the car's rear-view mirror to alert the driver there's another car in the way. I want an audio. Warning, you are about to crash.
You know, I'm just thinking of, remember...
No, you got to have that clip from Serenity. Oh, God, we're all going to die.
No, you know, I was thinking of, remember The Duel?
Which
Steven
Duel?
Steven Spielberg's old movie?
No.
The Duel, with the truck in the desert and the guys trying to get away from the truck.
I'm clueless.
You're kidding, really?
Yep.
All right, we'll talk offline about that.
Okay, a couple more points on this. For it to work effectively, all vehicles on the road would have to have this fitted. And theoretically, if just one car on a busy highway lacked the right gear, the consequences could be severe. Just a few technical details. The cars communicate using a wireless spectrum 5.9 gigahertz, which is licensed from the FCC for public safety. There's a whole bunch of more articles, but if you want to find out more, you can find it at CNET.com.
Awesome.
All right, we have a strange story, but this is really a... Where do I have it? Oh, I don't have my klaxon set up tonight. Well, it's not a spoiler alert anyway. That's what I save the klaxon for. Right, thanks. Stick that at the end, please. So the company I work for recently hired several cannibals in the interest of cultural diversity. You are all part of the team now, said the HR rep during the welcoming briefing. You get all the usual benefits. You can go to the cafeteria and get something to eat, but please don't eat any of the other employees. The cannibals promised they would not. 4 weeks later, their boss remarked, you're all working very hard, and I'm satisfied with you. However, one of our programmers has disappeared. Do any of you know what happened to her? The cannibals all shook their heads, no. After the boss left, the leader of the cannibals said to the others, which one of you idiots ate the programmer? A hand rose hesitantly, to which the leader of the cannibals continued, you fool! For 4 weeks we've been eating manager and no one noticed anything. But no, you had to go and eat someone who actually does something. Right, my wife sent me that one.
Okay.
That takes care of the news. Now, tell us about your hack you found.
You know, this is something I was actually thinking about because Halloween, we went to a festival downtown. We don't really go trick-or-treating per se, but, you know, all the companies in town, then they have a big city thing where all the companies have booths and you go and they give candy to all the kids. So it's like trick-or-treating, sort of. Mm-hmm. I was doing some flash photography. And to be quite honest with you, I hate the flash because it gives you that, you know, everything's bright right here and kind of fades out.
Yeah.
And I've got a Nikon D70, which I love, but, you know, still the standard flash is a little odd. But anyway, this is a flash diffuser that someone made to go on top of my Nikon, but you can probably do it with anything.
Really?
Made it out of a slide viewer. Mm-hmm. And I guess a little piece of tissue paper. Anyway, you can see how he made it. And it's pretty cool. And I also want to give the Make magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I got to give them kudos because I subscribed to their blog, and they have been putting out several hacks, really cool hacks, every freaking day. And it's like, where are they coming up with this stuff? It's some good stuff. So anyway, this is something that caught my eye because, you know, like I said, on Halloween, I was a little disappointed I had to use the flash, of course, at night. So
they usually have a lot of good stuff in Makezine. If you don't, stop by makezine.com, MAKEZINE. Good stuff.
I thought I was subscribed to that magazine because they really do a good job.
You're talking about the paper version.
The paper version.
Yeah.
I think they do it quarterly, so it's a big magazine. And, I mean, they just got some awesome stuff. So definitely go subscribe to Makezine.
Hello, this is Dr. Floyd.
And this is Dr. Grant from the Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd.
And you're listening to Chuck Chat Technorama.
Ooh, Technorama. That sounds fancy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear that's with Chuck and Craig.
Who?
Craig.
Craig Stepp?
Yes, Craig Stepp. You know him, right?
Oh, sure. Who doesn't know him?
Who doesn't know him?
You know, I do.
We're going to see those guys at the Expo.
Yes. By the way, everybody, if you're going to be in the Ontario, California, Ontario, California, we're going to be in the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. We're going to be floating around there. So if you're going to be showing up or something or in the area, send us an email. We'd like to meet you.
We'll be easy to find. We'll be wearing blindfolds because we'd rather hear you than see you. That's the only way I can recognize people without ruining the mental image that I've got.
Oh, yeah, you're that person.
Yeah. Otherwise, you take the blindfolds off and you go, you look nothing like I pictured, so I don't want to ruin that image. All right, Craig, we've got to rip through a couple of stories on your home media entertainment stuff.
Yeah, you know, I've been playing around with, I have Windows Media Edition installed, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure if I'm totally sold on it. But what I've been wanting to do is take a machine, install my, have my music on there, my videos, and pictures, and be able to look at them on the TV downstairs, which, you know, is a pretty common goal. I'm playing around with the Windows Media Edition. Of course, it has the nice little pretty interface, and you can view all your stuff and watch the TV and whatnot. Well, I noticed that there's some media extenders out there, which I haven't seen before. D-Link makes one. I know there's a bunch of others, but that's the only one I've really looked at. But there's some others that have a DVD player built in. And basically, if you have a wireless G, you know, 802.11G network, you can stream your live TV, your video, pictures, and everything to this unit. It'll display on your TV.
Mm.
which is pretty cool. And it gives you the nice interface, you know, sort of like the Windows Media Edition on your TV. You just put that up and you can watch whatever. You can pause the live TV, set up records and everything. Now, I found out this week that you don't actually have to have Windows Media Edition to make that happen. If you've got one of those devices, you can install the Media Connect. It's kind of like a plug-in sort of for XP. You install it, gives you an icon in your control panel. Other machines will be able to, like a device at your TV, you would give it access to your machine, and it would be able to feed off all your stuff that's in your media player library.
Nice. So
that's totally free. I also was playing around with a program called On2Share. You can install it on your laptop. You can install it on your desktop and or on your machine, too. And it's a plug-in for Windows Media Player. If it's there, I can actually share the libraries like you do in iTunes. You know, iTunes does a share library. If you're on the same network, you can watch the movies, or, the music and whatnot. You know, listen to music. Well, you can do the same thing with all your videos and everything that's in either media player. So I'm downstairs. I want to play some music from the one upstairs. Boom, there it is.
That's what you need. You really need to be able to look at stuff anywhere you are.
Yeah. So that's kind of my goal with all this. So anyway, the On2Share is a free plugin. It'll stick in there, and other people in your house can share your music off one machine and your videos. Which leads me to one thing I want to ask some people out. What I'm trying to do is I want to start ripping my DVDs, and I've got some with TV shows, but mostly they're just movies. I want to rip into like XVID, the XVID format. What's the best format for that, really? I mean, as far as compression and size, because I want it to look the best, but I want it to be kind of small, too, at the same time. So if anybody has some feedback on that, please let me know. But also this week, I got my Linux Journal magazine, which I always look forward to at the first of the month. Here it comes, and guess what was in it? What was the featured article, Chuck?
Myth TV.
Yes, it was. And I was like, oh, crap. You know, the whole thing was talking about Myth TV and all that. So I started playing around reading about Myth TV, and something I did not know it did is when you set it up to record your TV shows, you can also set it up to up to about 30 minutes after it's been recorded, it will go through your show and remove the commercials automatically. So when you view it, there's nothing there.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Nice.
I did not know you could do that. So I've downloaded some shows off the internet and go, when do the people have time to remove all these commercials? That's wise, because they're using Myth TV or something to that effect, ripping the commercials out automatically. So I was like, that's a nice little feature. And some of these media extenders that we talked about for the Windows Media Edition, they do also work off shares off of a server or something like that in your house. So you don't have to have Windows Media Edition or Media Player to actually make them work. I can just make a Samba share and read the videos and music and all that stuff too. So, you know, Myth TV is very flexible and extensible. And don't you have a friend that has that's really big into that?
Greg Hawley. We talked to him not too long ago.
Well, yeah, that's, we got to bring him. That's right. Yeah, not too long ago. Me back in July. Hey, but we didn't. I want to get him back on here because I want to talk to him more about that.
You bet.
Maybe we'll he's the guy to answer. Maybe he's the one to answer my XVID questions or DivX or whatever. I'm, you know.
He you might. Know. He might. I'll ask him at work.
Yeah.
All right. Let's give them what they want. Part what? Three of the Adam Savage interview.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Adam Savage. That's right. We've been doing the series with him, haven't we?
Yeah, we're on. You know, we're on his show.
Yeah.
All right. Hope you enjoy. This is part three of three. After this, we're out on the street again, looking for people to talk to.
Hey, come here. Well, listen, I've got a myth quiz for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. The first one. Can a human swing through the jungle on vines?
Oh. I would imagine if every vine was correctly placed and you knew the location of every vine, that, yes, it would be physically possible to do that kind of swinging. But the idea of a randomized jungle where vines just happen to be draped correctly is totally ludicrous. But I'd love to try it. I'd be the first one up there.
Well, I was reading thestraightdope.com, which is a site I frequent, and they were saying that, yes, possibly, but they were saying they didn't think that they were flexible enough, so they weren't sure about that. So, anyway.
No, I imagine there's plenty of plant matter out there that you could swing on, but not much you probably want to count on.
Yeah. All right, here's the next one. Tapping the side of a soda can will prevent its contents from foaming open when you open it.
That's total crap.
Yeah, see, my wife will tap the top of it if it accidentally gets shaken, you know, falls out of the refrigerator. She'll tap the top of it, and I've often wondered, I don't think that does any good.
No, it doesn't do any good. In fact, actually, apparently they've changed the formulation of how much carbon dioxide they put into soda over the past 20 years, so that if you shake up a soda, it will explode within a couple of minutes of shaking it, but very quickly it will actually settle down.
It goes back into saturation.
Shake it up. Yeah, so if you shake it up and then you wait 2 minutes, it won't explode. Because they're not necessarily ticking time bombs because the shipping was bad about a week ago.
Right. Well, that makes total sense. We just got a new vending machine here at work, and it just drops the drinks into the bottom. And I'm like, oh, crap. You know, you got to sit there, but you wait a minute or two, and then it's okay. So,
see, scuba divers know this stuff about, you know, gases and saturation.
Yeah.
That's absolutely.
Right. All right. Well, here's my last one. Mr. Okay. Ed, the talking equine of the television fame. Was he a horse? Was he a horse?
Was he a horse?
Yeah.
Oh, there's the myth that he was supposed to be a zebra painted white or something like that?
Sort of. You're right, though. I was reading over at Snopes.com. They have a whole write-up. Mm-hmm. Basically, the original horse they had didn't work out because it wasn't trained very well. They got a zebra from a local petting zoo, and because of the black and white cameras, they caused the... You can't see the stripes.
That seems like, kind of odd.
I had trouble believing that, but he was a Gravy's zebra, so they said you couldn't see the stripes. And it caused problems when TV started going into color. They wanted to keep the show in black and white to keep the ruse up, so they had to move the show to Saturdays out of prime time, I guess.
I've spent many, many, many dozens of hours combing the archives of Snopes.com, specifically because, you know, people expect me to know a lot of this esoteric.
Sure.
It's very funny to have ended up being, you know, I actually used to have all the, long before we did this show, I actually had all of Jan Brunsfeld's urban legend books because I was fascinated by them, and it really is kind of amazing that we've gotten this opportunity to learn so much about the subject.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask earlier, do you ever see an end to the material for the show? But it sounds like no.
Well, you know, as we have a pat answer to that, which is, do you think people are ever going to stop believing stupid things?
I work with computers, and no, I don't think so.
Yeah, then we're never going to run out of material. We definitely have to comb through some esoteric stuff, but, you know, there's just, we've probably got 40 or 50 myths in the hopper right now, sitting, waiting to be developed. We've got a team of four researchers and producer Peter Reese, who's the real brains behind the outfit, just working through these things. It's no end. And really, at this point, probably about 20% of our myths come right off the Discovery fan site. Fans have really dialed into what is testable and what's not. You know, early on in the show, of course, I got a lot of emails like, can you bust the myth of the Bush presidency? Not necessarily scientifically testable, although, you know, you put a couple of beers into me and I'll give a diatribe about statistical analysis.
They're making stuff up for you now.
But yeah, the fans actually often have some really good input, and some of the best input we get are actually from professionals in the field. At this point, Jamie and I have been consulted by the Oak Ridge National Government Ballistic Laboratories, by Sandia Labs, by JPL, by Lawrence Livermore, by the FBI Crime Labs. All these people have emailed us at various times to ask us about, you know, some specifics of our research or how we developed a certain piece that we built. We've had forensics experts ask us how to embed bones into ballistics gel and what was the protocol we used.
That's cool.
What were the analogs for casting? I've actually come up with a recipe for casting urethane stain resin to be the same tensile strength as wet bone. And that's actually been, we've been consulted on that. And, you know, oftentimes a line of question from a real professional, a real engineer, I mean, Jamie's got a degree in Russian and I've got a high school diploma in drama. So we're not experts in this field at all. But often the line of question opened up by a real scientist brings on a whole new biff to test.
That is pretty cool, though.
You still have your tongue piercing?
No. I got rid of it the very next morning. That was awful. I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't eat anything for 24 hours. I was so hungry. The second I took it out, they had a nice, big, juicy cheeseburger for me to eat.
There you go.
I was at the hardware store yesterday, and I thought of that.
At the hardware store, looking at huge nails. I should ask Adam about this.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, my producer's not too into it, but one of the things I'd love to test are some of the fake here kind of feats of strength, like hanging from hooks in your back or having a cinder block broken on your chest with a sledgehammer. I'd love to try some of that stuff. While lying on a bed of nails, I'm dying to try that stuff out. My wife is sitting next to me. She's whinging at the thought.
I'd be into that. I'd be checking it out. No, I'd see that.
What kind of gadget? Go ahead. Right?
You know, it just turns out you have precious few pain receptors in your back. Apparently, it's not that hard.
Well, it has to do with the distribution of the weight, too, as I understand it.
Exactly right. Once you distribute the weight across a bunch of points, it's not so hard to lie on a bed of nails.
Well, what kind of gadgets do you own, Adam?
What kind of gadgets don't I own is probably the better question.
Cell phone, BlackBerry, digital camera, that kind of thing?
Probably a couple of each. Our house probably has 5 or 6 iPods in it, various headphones, computer peripherals, little traveling wheels, scanners, printers. I've also kept every PowerBook I've ever owned. I've got about a dozen in the basement. I'm definitely a techno whore from way back.
We all are.
And now for the
I was just at the Sharper Image today buying a fully animatronic monkey's head.
I've seen that.
Yeah. Had to have one. Come on. It's time to just order it right away.
Now for the bonus question. Do you listen to any podcasts?
I have not yet broken into the podcast thing. I've been looking at the tag on my iTunes, and I've been thinking about doing it, but I have yet to actually do it.
Come to the dark side.
Where do I start?
Go to chuckcheck.com.
Good a place as any.
You can start with our show.
Okay, I will do that as soon as I get off the phone.
All right.
Oh boy.
I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Was Mr. Whipple really nice?
Mr. Whipple was a sweetheart. He absolutely was great. It was an amazing thing for a 16-year-old me to work with the guy. He actually got his start as a background dancer in some of the early Ziegfeld Follies. Back when James Cagney was a singer.
Oh, wow.
He was one of the background dancers. Yeah. I actually recently asked my mom. You know, I've had people tell me they saw that commercial, and I recently asked my mom. I said, "Did that commercial ever air?" And she said, "Yeah, you bet it did. You made $15,000 doing that commercial."
What?
And I said, "So you know, where's the dough?"
Yeah, exactly.
She said,
You know that 6 months you spent not attending any classes at New York University? I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Yeah, that was on your dime. I didn't pay for a penny of it." And I said, "You know." Suddenly, considering my sister went to college and got a master's degree, I don't feel so bad about sponging off you till I was nearly 30.
That's pretty funny. Well, I saw the picture on your website, and I was like, oh, yeah, well, I don't remember the show specifically, but, you know, growing up and watching as much TV as I have, I was like, man, Mr. Whip, I didn't know you were in that commercial, and so.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm going to have to search
really
the archives
fun.
For that one.
Oh, yeah, and...
It's actually, I believe, Discovery got the commercial. I told our footage researcher when we were doing Exploding Porta Potty, and so it would probably be a perfect throw.
Yeah.
And she contacted Charmin, and Charmin coughed up the commercial for her and said, feel free to use it in the show, no charge. And I've got a copy here. I got to show my wife.
Oh, I think no I did kidding. See that in the show. Didn't they play that in the show?
Yeah, absolutely they did. They played it during the episode.
And speaking of seeing you in places like that, you know, I was watching, you know, I've been watching the show for, I don't know, what, a year or so. And then all of a sudden, when you first started, I started watching for about a year. And then we had picked up the Matrix DVD.
And I'm
watching the special stuff, and I'm like, hey, there's Adam. He's talking about the special effect they're going to do. I totally didn't know that you were in a special effects at that time.
Yeah, that was an amazing DVD. I had some friends that called me up right after that DVD came out and said, dude, you're on it. And amazingly, you know, one of the things about the special effects guys, like me, work in the trenches, we never make it into the special features of DVDs. And that one was particularly wonderful in that almost all my colleagues from Industrial Light and Magic who were working for Warner Brothers at the time made it into the DVD as part of the archives footage. It was just it was fantastic.
I bet you got some stories from ILM, though.
You know, going to ILM when I did was just like reaching absolute heaven. It was just incredible. It was one of the, I mean, the first thing I ever thought I wanted to do for a living was work for Lego, and the second thing was to work on Star Wars. And I did get to spend a year as R&D manager for a small startup toy company, and I, you know, spent 5 years working at ILM and, you know, working with people I'd been reading about since I was 11 years old, and the depth of knowledge and friendly interaction and trading of skills and techniques was just unparalleled.
I bet it was.
And it also, you know, it was also amazing to CG really is taking over the industry of practical model making, and I really feel like I was very lucky to get in at the tail end of a really amazing era of filmmaking and innovation like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I saw you on the website working on the buildings for Kamino and Attack of the Clones.
That was a tremendous amount of fun. I mean, still among my favorite things ever to do is to work on spaceships. To do high-detailed, super, super tight camera modeling, you know, where the thing you build is going to fill a movie screen and has to look hundreds and hundreds of feet high. There's few things more absorbing.
Wow. And you got to get it right, too. So I imagine you spend a lot of time staring at it and...
Oh yeah, no. And well, there was a funny interaction at one point at ILM. I got known as good at doing what they call hard edge model making, which is that really tight close up camera work kind of model making for spaceships. And a friend of mine came up and he was like, "So, give me just a quick lowdown. What is the Star Wars aesthetic? You know, how does this distribution work of little things? We call them greeblies. You know, the little detail pieces." And I said, "Well," my friend Fawn and I immediately started schooling him. So, okay, look, you got to do two, and then a space, and then one. You can't ever do three things in a row. If it's three things in a row, that's Star Trek, not Star Wars. You got to space out the details. Then you got to picture that it was at some point retrofitted. That's very Star Wars universe. You got to pull something. You got to build something and pull it off, and then build something that was built in its place. That's very key.
I can see that. Yeah, that's cool.
Tell us about the Brown Pants Index.
Yeah, the Brown Pants Index was initiated when I had to stand on the deck of the Mythtanic, 28,000-pound steel tugboat while it sank to see if it sucked me down. And that was a classic example of us not having any idea what the results of a myth would be. Often we have a pretty good idea what we're going to end up with. Just as often we're actually totally surprised by the results we get. But in that one, we really didn't know. We're in 75 feet of water. It's San Francisco Bay, so the water's like 58 degrees. Mm-hmm. I'm in a wetsuit, but I'm wearing a weight belt to keep neutrally buoyant. And I have to tell you, I was absolutely petrified. It was very scary. And we consider that the top of the Mythbusters Brown Pants Index. There are some other things we've done that are pretty scary. Being in a remote-controlled car when Jamie lost control of it and drove me through a fence, that was up there, wondering how I was going to get out of that.
Ooh.
But, you know, for the most part, we really do try and we succeed at even though some of the things we do look dangerous, really crossing all our T's and dotting our I's and having the best experts we can to make sure that we're safe.
Cool.
Yeah, y'all look like you go out of your way sometimes, especially, what was it, there was one, I was trying to think, maybe it was Tori or something had that Oh, I know. He was trying to hold the plywood up, and he had that whole... Looks like he's going to go boxing with somebody. The full body armor?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was testing... what was he? Oh, he was testing the
retesting
plywood builder. Yes, yeah. Retesting plywood builder to see if you could hold on to a piece of plywood in a strong wind, which, of course, you can't.
Oh, I was like, right. There's no way that that would work. I mean, you have to have hands of steel to hold on to something like that.
Absolutely, and even when Buster had hands of steel, he felt like a stone.
No, and poor Buster.
Is there still only one Buster, or has he been replaced yet?
Buster has not been replaced. He's been rebuilt. The original Buster was given to us by a government agency who shall remain nameless. He was a real Hybrid 2 crash test dummy who had outlived his service years, and it was pretty impressively built, you know, all steel, cast aluminum, rubber, and leather, and various other materials. And, you know, we thought he'd be perfect for our testing, but we found out that crash test dummies are actually made to take much less than we often apply to a test subject in our myth. The average car crash puts about 70 G's of force on the human body. Well, when we were driving Buster from the top of a crane to see if you threw a hammer ahead of yourself, jumping off a bridge, it would somehow break the surface tension of the water and help you live, he was pulling 500 G's when he hit the water. It was enough to shatter his cast aluminum shoulder blade and pull his legs right off of
his
body.
Yeah, he got arms and legs ripped right off of that one.
Poor guy.
Absolutely. And in fact, we found out later from a guy who works on the crews that searched San Francisco Bay for bridge jumpers that a lot of people who land in pieces.
Oh, wow.
Hitting water at that speed is absolutely like falling onto the street. So one of the things we did when we finally decided, you know, we had burnt Buster to a crisp doing the Chinese astronaut myth.
That's how he got burnt. I'm often wondering that.
Got totally blown up. So we decided to go in and make a brand new Buster. Of course, we had 4 days to do it. The original cost about $150,000. We rebuilt him in 4 days for about probably $5,000. And one of the things we did was we eliminated all the close tolerances on his joints. We made them very loose fitting. And we gave him frangible bones that break under the same tension as real bones. We gave him silicone fireproof skin. And, you know, he's so reconfigurable at this point that we accidentally dropped him out of an airplane at 3,000 feet a few weeks ago in the Mojave Desert. He landed in every piece he could be sundered into, and we had him up and running again for another try in 45 minutes.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Exactly right.
I bet y'all are just laughing at it. Outlasted his service. We'll just put it back together.
Well, Adam, have we missed anything, or is there anything you'd like to ask us?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Oh, it's been great talking to you. We appreciate the time.
Chuck Chat is the only show that you know you can go to Fillmore Head and the kind of stuff like Cooper Geeks.
Geek Thoughts.
If I ever get to name a street, I'm going to name it Disk Drive.
Hey, Craig.
Yes, sir.
I think we're gonna have to wrap it up. I mean, have to wrap it up.
Huh?
We ran over. We still have a whole bunch of stuff left in the outline to talk about, but we may
save it for Wednesday.
Save it for Wednesday, because Wednesday is going to be an interesting show with us on our last vapors of whatever it is we vaporize until the expo, because our minds are going to be like westward bound.
We're already giddy, can't you tell?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
So should we do the end of show thing?
Yeah, bring it on.
Okay. Tell them how to get a hold of us.
Let's see, you call that, what's that number? 206-222-CHAT.
How about we can get somebody to sing that?
You know, so call our listener in line. And you can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com. You can email me. That's kreg@chuckchat.com. And don't forget to visit our website. Sign up for our mailing list. We have some cool Technorama t-shirts at the Cafe Press site. Forums, consolidated forums over at friendsintech.com. And all kinds of stuff. And be sure to sign up for the blog. Subscribe to the blog somewhere in there, because we always put stuff in there that doesn't necessarily pertain to the show, but it could be, you know, blog related. No, articles.
Dog. Any parting words of wisdom?
Yeah. Computer programmers know how to use their hardware.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yes, we do. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Hey, if you're not subscribed, yes.
HTML designers do it with style.
Save that for the next time. Binary high five.
101, y'all.